The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
Welcome to Webster Groves Health Radio. I'm your host, Matt Factor, from Factor Physical Therapy. That's located in Webster Groves at the corner of Watson and McLeod Station Road in Yorkshire Village. And I'm here with my co-host, David Factor. On Webster Groves Health Radio, we discuss health-related issues, along with improving our community. For today's show, we invited on Dr. Michael Twyman, who is a cardiologist at the St. Louis Heart and Vascular Cardiology. Welcome to the show, Dr. Twyman.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. I'm from St. Louis originally. I'm from South County, not too far from where your location is at. And I've been practicing cardiology since 2012. I did all my training down at St. Louis University, took 4 years off to do the U.S. Navy for internal medicine, and then came back and did cardiology.
Wonderful. So how was it internal medicine compared to cardiology? What was that like?
So I always wanted to do cardiology. The Navy had paid for my med school training, so I did 4 years of internal medicine for them. But internal medicine was challenging. I mean, you had the whole spectrum of disease and, you know, 18 to 100 years old, and it was challenging. And then I thought that, you know, my skill set was better meant to be a cardiologist because I really enjoyed the imaging, the discussing the lipids, lifestyle, that I could kind of focus in a little bit more on that.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. So where's your practice located?
So I'm currently working with St. Louis Heart and Vascular. We have offices all around St. Louis. My South County base is on the campus at DePere Hospital. My other office that I see patients at generally is up in Bridgeton.
Okay.
So what services does your practice offer?
Pretty much everything under the sun cardiology related. We do diagnostic cardiac catheterizations. We do peripheral angiograms, we do ultrasounds of the heart, stress test, carotid ultrasounds. We have our own CT scanner to be able to do CT coronary calcium scoring. So pretty much everything other than emergency room.
Okay, wonderful. So right now, are you mainly focused on cardiology? Or are you also doing some internal medicine? Or could you be my primary doctor if I wanted you to be?
At this time, no, I'm not doing any true primary care, but I do have a lot of overlap in my patients, you know, helping them with managing their diabetes, their thyroid disorders. So it still kind of bleeds into cardiology.
Okay, interesting.
So why does the health of your heart matter? And what caused you to choose this specialty?
Well, your heart is the, you know, main organ that's pumping blood around your system. And if your heart goes out, you tend to go out. So the reason I chose cardiology is it was one of the most fascinating organs that I studied when I was in my training. I enjoy the kind of the day-to-day end of cardiology, that it's no days the same. I mean, you see patients in the office and trying to work with them to prevent them from having the first heart attack. You may go into the hospital and take care of somebody who's had a heart attack and heart failure, do some procedures, do some imaging. So it's every day is varied. That's what I really enjoy about cardiology.
How would someone know if they need a cardiologist?
Good question. If you're actively having cardiac type symptoms, of course you should see a cardiologist. So, I mean, those symptoms would tend to be chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue, palpitations, heart racing sensation, passing out. But my outpatient focus is generally trying to be, you know, more preventative, working with people who maybe have a family history, have high cholesterol, some other risk factors, and really don't want to end up with their first heart attack or stroke.
So what are these preventative methods for cardiology?
So there's many. I tend to kind of focus on two major ones when I first start working with patients. Is one, do some type of structural test, depending on their age. The test I tend to default to is called the CT coronary calcium score. It's about a $100 imaging test of your heart arteries. You have three arteries that sit on the outside of your heart that provide the nutrients to the heart. Calcium is supposed to be in your bones and teeth, and if it's, you know, building up in the walls of your arteries, you're starting to develop atherosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries. The calcium score test is very good at picking that up earlier before people even actually have symptoms. Start with that, then tend to do a fairly comprehensive blood panel that looks at inflammation, lipid particle numbers, and many other kind of more novel or specific markers of cardiovascular risk.
So what does what causes the buildup of the calcium?
Calcium is part of the plaque kind of maturing. So plaque is damage of the heart wall arteries that has happened because the cholesterol that's going around the system has gotten oxidized or damaged. I tell patients frequently the oxidized cholesterol is like rusted cholesterol. Your body then has to deal with that. And that stuff tends to get stuck below the walls of the artery and starts building up the plaque.
Can this happen at any age?
It tends to happen more as you age, but it can happen earlier and earlier. As I'm seeing in my practice, I've had people in their mid-40s getting bypass surgery because they end up getting a calcium score, had some very minor risk factors, and they had the highest calcium score test I'd ever seen. So that's why I frequently tell people, just looking at somebody, you can't tell how healthy the inside is.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So you talked about doing a coronary calcium test. Is this something like a professional athlete or somebody could do to like enhance their performance? If you found it, then you could clear it out or something? Or,
well, what's interesting about the calcium score test is that it's been around for many years, but now it's just getting a little bit more attention since the last president, I should say not the last president, but Bill Clinton, when he was in office, had passed many stress tests. And only a couple of years after leaving office, he ends up getting multi-vessel bypass surgery. So now every president and every astronaut has to get a calcium score test.
What's bypass surgery for our audience listeners?
Sure. So bypass surgery is a major open heart surgery procedure where they take veins out of your legs generally, or an artery that's on the backside of your chest wall, and they bypass literally a blockage in one of your heart arteries. So they tie an artery or vein past the blockage to restore blood flow downstream.
And is open heart surgery where they're actually cracking the chest open and cutting the, down their sternum and opening them up that way?
Generally, yes. There are some minimally invasive ways to do certain heart operations, but typically it involves being able to visualize the coronary arteries openly with the chest open, yes.
Okay. And so the person's alive while you're doing this.
That's right? Correct.
So their heart's beating. You didn't have to do any type of artificial pump or anything off to the side or...
So this is not my area of expertise. I don't actually perform this procedure,
okay.
But there are different versions of bypass surgery where the heart is still beating and they can tie on to the bypass grafts to the areas that are blocked. Other times they will have the heart stop briefly while you're on a heart-lung bypass machine.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So what is heart disease and how is it diagnosed?
So heart disease has many definitions, but majority of people, when they say I have heart disease, tends to mean they have blockages in one of their heart arteries. How's it diagnosed? You can first start with a good history and physical, listening to their symptoms. Are they having chest pain, shortness of breath, fatigue with their activities? But typically will require some type of imaging or stress test to really diagnose what's going on with them.
Interesting. So can you get this diagnosis in one visit, or is it something where someone's coming back multiple times over months?
It's typically, a first meeting is taking their history, figuring out what they've done in the past, had they had prior heart testing done, then finding out what's the most appropriate test for them, getting the test done, having them come back for at least a second visit, go over the results, and come up with a lifestyle plan for them.
Okay. I'd seen online when I was reading about you that you did advanced lipid profiles. What are those? And can you tell, the listeners about it?
Sure. So an advanced lipid profile is looking at more than just traditional cholesterol. So most people are familiar with total cholesterol, HDL, LDL, and triglycerides. And that was the best technology there was 20, 30 years ago. But the actual cholesterol doesn't predict risk very well. It's the particles that actually transport the cholesterol around the system that predicts risk. So I frequently tell patients it's like a car. The car is the particle, the cholesterol are the passengers. The car drives the cholesterol around the system to the different organs that need the cholesterol. Every cell in your body needs cholesterol, but if the particles are getting damaged, that's what actually causes the problem. The cholesterol by itself isn't the problem.
Oh, that's very interesting, because for so long we always just hear, watch out for cholesterol, and then it ends up being, that's not really our main focus. So,
correct.
So we both have, I guess, you got good and bad cholesterol. What's the difference between the two?
I know where you're going, but I typically don't. I try not to reinforce that there's something that's good or something that's bad. Okay. Cholesterol is just cholesterol. You know, every cell in your body uses cholesterol to make its outer shells. You use your cholesterol to make your hormones. Most of your brain is made of cholesterol and fat. So cholesterol by itself isn't good or bad. It depends on what happens to the cholesterol. And again, it's mostly if the cholesterol is getting oxidized or damaged, that would be the, quote, bad cholesterol. Most people will consider LDL bad and HDL good, but there's some specific things you can pick up on the particle testing that really tells you.
All right, so it's really just not specific enough.
Correct. It's not specific enough.
Interesting. So so how would someone, so if someone came to you and they said, okay, I heard about this cool test where you check the advanced lipid profile, what is the test and what do they have to do?
It's a blood test, and there's also some urine tests that can be done that looks at inflammation and how well your kidneys are working. The test is generally the first time best done fasting for 8 to 10 hours. So tell people eat their dinner, don't eat breakfast, take their usual medication supplements with water, do the test. The lipids get sent out to a specialty lab, generally come back in about a week. So I usually see patients back 1 to 2 weeks after they do the blood work and go over the results.
Is the fasting because what you're eating is influencing what the levels are?
The fasting helps with two tests typically on the panel, looking at your fasting insulin level and your fasting triglyceride level. Also, we'll look at your fasting glucose level.
Oh, okay, interesting.
It lets me know how well you're able to process carbohydrates.
Interesting.
All right. What is atherosclerosis or arteriosclerosis?
The athero or arterio is the blood vessel. Sclerosis is hardening, so it's damage of the blood vessel. So it's just another term for coronary artery disease.
Yeah, okay.
Does everybody get this?
Good question. It's very prevalent, but it isn't 100% guaranteed that you'll have it. I mean, there's been CT scans done on Egyptian mummies that showed that they had calcification in their arteries, and most of the mummies were in their 30s and 40s. So coronary disease is very prevalent, but it's not 100% guaranteed you get it.
Is that when you would do like a coronary calcium test then? And then you would just try to identify it at the 30s or 40s, and then you would offer them some type of risk factor modification or something like that?
Correct. So the calcium score test is, like I said earlier, it's a very good screening test at who's low risk and who is high risk. If you have a calcium score of 0, your risk is 0.4% risk of a heart attack over the next 5 years. If your score is higher than 0, depends how high it is, it's somewhat logarithmic. So the higher the score, the higher the risk. So again, when you look at somebody on the outside, they look like Adonis, their inside can be trashed, and they have a super high calcium score test. They're high risk, and there's other things you'd want to talk to them about to try to mitigate that risk.
Is there a way, like if, have they figured this out, that you could possibly stress somebody out so much that this goes through the roof, or it wouldn't even impact that, but you still could get some type of heart incident or something like that, or does that even play a role?
By meaning stress, like emotional stress, or that they're under some kind of physical stress?
I'd say emotional stress or...
Yeah, emotional stress is one of the risk factors for cardiovascular disease. Is, if you ramp up your cortisol levels, your blood sugar goes up, your blood gets stickier. So yes, there's definitely an increased risk of cardiovascular events when people are under significant stressors.
I just wanted to remind our listeners that they are listening to Webster Groves Health Radio on KWRH LP with Matt Factor and David Factor of Factor Physical Therapy. And our guest is Dr. Michael Twyman, who is a cardiologist at the St. Louis Heart and Vascular Cardiology.
So that's interesting. So, so we covered emotional stress. So what if it's just physical stress? Like if you were in the military, so let's say they send somebody on a 10-mile hike with 80-pound rucksack or something. Can that cause a problem, or do you have to screen for that ahead of time?
So that's a good question. Physical activity is one of the things that typically will unmask a cardiovascular issue. So, your heart can be fine at rest, but when you push it, you may not be able to provide enough nutrients and oxygen downstream to where the problem is. So many times people will notice this if they've just started an exercise regimen that, they're getting some kind of discomfort, pressure, pain in their chest. They're just more short of breath at lower levels of activity than they really expect, or they just feel very fatigued. So that's actually somewhat of a late finding. By the time you have symptoms, generally you're going to have a 70% blockage in one of your three major arteries to have symptoms. So you can do a stress test, see if you can try to provoke them their symptoms that they're having with activity, and then figure out, is it low risk or high risk? If it's high risk, you may end up doing an invasive procedure to go see how much blockage there truly is.
So the stress test is trying to mimic what they say that they're experiencing, whether they're out walking or if they're at the gym and they keep having some type of episode. So then you guys try to recreate it, and then you track their response and try to figure out what's happening.
Correct. You try to recreate it in a supervised, monitored environment that is as similar to their exercise as possible. Typically, to kind of wrist stratify people, it's usually using a treadmill if they're able to walk. The treadmill goes up a little faster, a little higher every 3 minutes, so it's standardized to everybody. So somebody who's in really good shape is probably going to go, you know, well over 10 minutes on this test. Somebody who's in poor shape is maybe going 6 to 8 minutes on the test.
What about, can you do it with medicine? Like create a chemical stress test?
There's a couple different versions of, quote, chemical stress test. I actually did two of them earlier today before coming to this interview. But typically a stress test can either have a exercise component or a chemical component, and then you may or may not do some type of imaging of the heart after the stressor. The chemical stressors can vasodilate or open up your blood vessels and provide a way to see if there's a severe blockage in one of your arteries. That area of the heart isn't going to get as much of the medicine that's given during this infusion versus the areas that don't have the blockages.
So what is an EKG?
It stands for an electrocardiogram. EKG is when they put the stickers on your chest and are measuring the magnetic force that's coming from your mitochondria and your heart. Generally, the EKG is a snapshot in time of the electrical activity, what's going on at that point. The EKGs are frequently used, you know, when you're coming in with some type of cardiac complaint. It can see, you know, has there been a possible prior heart attack. You also will do it frequently when people coming in with some type of heart rhythm issue that they're saying that their heart's racing, they're passing out. You want to make sure their heart rates aren't too slow or that there's some type of block in their electrical system.
Is a 3-lead EKG equal to like a 12-lead, or aren't there even like 15-lead EKGs?
There's actually multiple 100-lead EKGs. Okay. We don't do those at this time. Those are more experimental for the most part. But the standard of care now typically is more of a 12-lead EKG. By leads, just means that's where the stickers are located. You have 6 leads on your chest, and then you have a couple on your arms and your lower extremities. It just gives us a view of your heart's electroactivity from multiple angles. A couple people, it's like taking pictures around something, and you're just, you know, walking in a circle, taking pictures of the same thing.
So if they don't do this type of test, then it's possible that things could be missed because it wouldn't show the whole heart electrical activity, or not from an experienced cardiologist, you could tell immediately that there'd be a problem.
The EKG is a snapshot in time. You know, you can have a normal EKG and still have a severely elevated calcium score. You can still be very high risk for a heart attack. The EKG just kind of tells you what's going on with that patient right at the moment. So If they have no symptoms, you may not necessarily see anything that's clinically beneficial for you.
Oh, interesting. Hmm.
So what is a cardiac catheterization?
A cardiac catheterization is a procedure that is invasive that looks at the actual blood vessels with a procedure that's called a coronary angiogram. The procedure typically takes about 15 to 20 minutes. They put an IV in one of your arteries. It can be either the artery in your wrist called the radial artery or the artery in your leg called the femoral artery. Then you use a catheter, which is like a straw. You feed it up to the heart, and those three arteries that are called the coronary arteries sit on the outside of the heart. You put the catheter into those arteries, and then you inject contrast or dye down the arteries while the patient's laying under a special camera to take pictures, so you can see the actual blockages if present in the arteries.
So you're basically watching the blood flow throughout the heart and the arteries.
Correct.
So is it possible to explain to the listeners what the difference is between like peripheral vascular disease and then a central heart problem?
Sure. So peripheral generally means blockages in your leg arteries. Atherosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries, is a systemic process. You have 60,000 miles of blood vessels, so you can get blockages in any of the 60,000 miles of blood vessels. Where the blockages are is where they tend to have the problems. So peripheral vascular disease generally is going to be you have blockages in your leg arteries, and you may have something called claudication when that happens. Claudication is discomfort, cramps in your legs when you're exercising. It's very similar to getting chest pain. It's just you're not getting enough nutrients to the muscles downstream. But peripheral Peripheral vascular disease also can mean carotid arteries, arteries that feed the blood to your brain.
Interesting. So so are there advantages or disadvantages to using the radial artery approach with the catheterization or the femoral artery approach?
Sure. So I trained at St. Louis University from 2009 to 2012, and the radial artery catheterization procedure was really starting to ramp up in popularity at that time due to the benefits of there's less bleeding risk to the patient and a faster recovery for the patient. Typically, if you go through the femoral artery, the patient has to lie flat for a couple hours after the procedure to let the puncture site where the equipment was introduced, let that area heal up. You have a hole essentially in the artery. You have to have a little plug of collagen or platelets in your body to kind of close that hole up. So you want to make sure that they're not bleeding. The radial artery approach is more optimal for bleeding because you can see if there's bleeding and it's easier to recover. You don't have to lie flat after the procedure.
That makes sense. So it's just easier to kind of control the blood flow afterwards. So simpler.
Correct.
Ah, so I saw when I was reading about you that you're also certified in echocardiology. What is it and how is it done?
Sure. Echocardiography is taking an ultrasound probe to take pictures of the different heart valves and the heart structures. It's very similar to when you use an ultrasound to take pictures of a baby. They put gel on the chest, they take the probe, they move it to different positions, and using ultrasound waves, they're able to recreate pictures of the heart tissue. And you can do different things that look at the blood flow, and you can really determine if somebody's heart is working well or if it's not working well.
With this, do you examine the internal structure of the heart as well as the external structure, or do you just do the internal?
I don't know exactly how to answer that. You're looking at mostly the thickness of the left ventricle, which is the main squeezing chamber of the heart. Mm-hmm. You're looking at how well the four valves open and close, if they're leaking or if they're stenotic, meaning not letting enough blood flow through them. There is something called the pericardium. It's the sac that wraps the heart. So that is outside the heart. You do see it on occasion that it's thickened, and that could indicate they've had some inflammation of the pericardium. Every once in a while, people will have a fluid collection between the pericardium and their heart called the pericardial effusion. So yes, you see some structures outside the heart, but you're mainly looking inside the heart.
How's that different from pericardial tamponade? Is that the same?
Pericardial tamponade is when it's not necessarily the size of the fluid collection outside the heart. It's generally how fast that fluid collection gets there. You can basically think of it as, you know, if your heart's a water balloon and you have all this pressure on the outside of it, the water balloon can't expand. And if it's large enough, patients can pass away from it because they can't get blood around the system.
Hmm. Interesting. So what is an angioplasty or balloon angioplasty?
Angioplasty is when they use a wire that has a special balloon on it. Then they take that wire and balloon and pass it through the arteries and go to the area where there's a blockage, and then they use the balloon to smash the plaque out of the way. That was the only way to really treat atherosclerosis in the late 70s, other than medications and bypass surgery. It was later in the 80s and 90s that stents really became more common to use after the angioplasty. The reason they switched to using more stents was that the angioplasty was a good procedure, but typically didn't last long enough. The artery would tend to what we call restenose or re-block up.
So the stents, they're more of a longer effect on the issue that you have.
They are. The stents, I frequently tell patients, though, they still are somewhat Band-Aids, and they're spot welding the problem that you have. The stents, if you're actively having a heart attack, yes, that can save your life. But the stents, you know, coming, you know, from an outpatient who says they have a little chest pain when they're out, you know, golfing or playing tennis, the stent may make them feel better sooner, but the stent in of itself doesn't reduce the risk of heart attack, doesn't reduce the risk of death.
Okay, that concludes part one of our talk with Dr. Michael Twyman, who's a cardiologist at St. Louis Heart and Vascular Cardiology. And thank you for coming and talking with us about your practice.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And we'd like to thank our listeners for joining us for Webster Groves Health Radio. Join us for upcoming shows on Wednesdays at 9:30 a.m. and Thursdays at 2:30 p.m.